Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Quick Hits Clay Shoot Fundraiser. West Texas Food Bank has scheduled Aim to End Hunger Clay Shoot Fundraiser from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. today at Midland Shooters Association, 7400 West County Road, 170 Midland. Scholarships and team opportunities are available. To sponsor, register, or for more information, call 432-697-4003 or visit tinyurl.com/2J2V6KFX. Adopt a Pup. The Odessa Animal Shelter, 910 West 42nd Street, will be having an Adopt a Pup event from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. today. The adoption fee will be $25. CASA Lunch and Learn. CASA of West Texas, 611 West Texas Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a lunch and learn from noon to 1 p.m. today. Children in foster care are longing for a hero. A CASA volunteer lunch will be provided. Visit tinyurl.com/2p8hu7h2. Blood Drive. Vitalint has scheduled a blood drive from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. today at YMCA, 3001 University Boulevard. To make an appointment, visit donorsvitalint.org. Sexual Assault Response. Crisis Center of West Texas, 910 B South Grant Avenue, has scheduled Sexual Assault Response Team informational session from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. today. Volunteers are required by the Texas Attorney General to complete a classroom training program and an 8-hour of on-the-job shadowing. This course will cover the dynamics of sexual and domestic violence, trauma-informed care, and other tools that will help you support survivors. For more information, email Hannah Horick at hannah@ccwtx.org. To register, visit tinyurl.com/28nrhu9k. Historic Heirloom. Piano Works Gallery and Clocks, 1019 North Midkiff Road, Midland, has scheduled a special reception to view a historic heirloom clock at 6 p.m. today. The clock was originally constructed in 1714 in the Netherlands and made its way into the home of Midland resident Florence Larsch, who passed away earlier this year. The estate of Larsch has donated this historic timepiece to the National Clock and Watch Museum in Columbia, Pennsylvania. This will be the public's last chance to view the clock before it leaves West Texas forever. There will also be a history discussion of the clock. Refreshments will be provided. For more information, call 432-262-4420. Ruiz Crutcher nabs 244th District Judge seat. Pierce defeats Mayor Hovan for precinct chair. The 244th District Court has a new judge following a Tuesday GOP runoff between Cindy Weir Nutter and Lori Ruiz Crutcher. Ruiz Crutcher defeated former county attorney Weir Nutter 2,122 to 1,631, or 56.53% to 43.45%. There is no Democrat in the November general election. In the March primary, Weir Nutter had taken home 3,963, or 46.06% of the votes, and Ruiz Crutcher garnered 2,841, or 32.31%. Former Odessa Municipal Court Judge Dennis Jones came in a distant third with 22.63%, or 1,990 votes. In order to win outright, one of the candidates needs to take home 50% plus one vote. Jones would later endorse Crutcher in the runoff. In the GOP precinct chair races, Odessa Mayor Javier Hovan was defeated by Richard Pierce, a political newcomer, 177 to 137, for the chair of Precinct 204. Mark Mata, and Odessa City Councilman defeated Judy Makehill Calloway, 69-43, for the 312th Precinct Chair. OC Trustees OK Redistricting Map. The Odessa College Board of Trustees has approved a redistricting plan and funding for the downtown project. OC has 9 board members and 2 will have mega districts. Board Chairman Gary Johnson said the district had to change because the population of the county is up by 65,000. The board also approved a resolution for an option to keep trustees in office until their term expires. Attorney Daniel Harper said the code is specific to community college districts. The board also approved funding for Phase 1 of the downtown project at 222 East 4th Street. The requested funding from Vision 2030 was a little more than $1.5 million. Vice President of Administrative Services Ken Zartner said this includes all the green space minus the academic building. The total estimated cost is about $3.1 million. Johnson said the goal is to have it complete by next summer. Architect Cruz Castillo said Wednesday and Thursday the completed construction documents will go out to bid. A pre-bid meeting will be held June 7th and bids will be due June 14th. Trustees approved moving $177,475 from the Parker Endowment and $155,648 from the Davidson Family Endowment to the OC Foundation. Chief Financial Officer Brandy Hamm said they will be transferred with the previously established restrictions, such as service hours and GPA. Johnson said they will have close to $500,000 to move after a year or so. The board also reorganized but kept the same officers with Johnson as chair, Dr. Tara Deaver as vice chair, Trudy Lewis as secretary, and Bruce Shearer as assistant secretary. Independent auditors Whitley Penn were appointed. They were formerly Johnson Miller. President Gregory Williams gave his report, which included record-breaking graduation of 734 students and 1,175 credentials awarded. He said the number of credentials has increased more than 19% from 2019. Landgraf's committee addresses orphaned wells. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, convened the House Environmental Regulation Committee for a hearing on Wednesday to discuss the state's options for plugging orphaned wells, a press release stated. The importance of Texas oil and gas has hit an all-time high, not only for Texans but for every American and freedom-loving person on this planet, Landgraf stated in the press release. But the prominence of our past and the promise of our future has left us with a significant number of orphaned wells in need of plugging. Part of the purpose of today's hearing was to identify ways to strengthen Texas's well plugging program. Landgraf was appointed chairman of the House Environmental Regulation Committee by House Speaker Dade Phelan in February 2021. In addition to overseeing the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, the 9-member committee has jurisdiction over all matters pertaining to waste disposal and pollution, including environmental regulations of industrial development, the press release detailed. Earlier this year, Phelan issued interim committee charges for the 82nd legislature, reviewing how federal funds can be used to complement state efforts on well plugging and pollution cleanup in among the charges issued by the House Environmental Regulation Committee. As chairman of the Environmental Regulation Committee, I am tasked with overlooking one of the most important committees in the Texas House, Landgraf stated in the press release. I appreciate Speaker Phelan's thoughtful and deliberate leadership and look forward to completing the work he has entrusted to our committee ahead of the upcoming legislative session. As always, I'll use any influence I have to fight for the Permian Basin and protect the West Texas way of life. Thankfully, what's best for the Permian happens to always be what's best for Texas. In addition to identifying funds for well plugging, the House Environmental Regulation Committee has been charged with monitoring federal regulations proposed by the Environmental Protection Agency that could directly impact economic development, manufacturing, or industrial activities, the press release stated. To see the full list of interim charges issued to each committee of the Texas House of Representatives, visit tinyurl.com/43W7ETMM. Odessan convicted of child sex assault. An Ector County jury took an hour Wednesday to convict a 24-year-old Odessa man accused of having a toddler perform oral sex on him. Fabian Andres Ortega was indicted on one count of aggravated sexual assault of a child in December 2020, a few months after a Del Rio transgender woman contacted authorities to tell them Ortega had shared with her a photo of a young girl he said was a one-year-old relative. Fern Garcia testified Monday that she'd met Ortega in March 2020 through the dating app Tinder, joined him at a Del Rio Motel 6, and had a sexual encounter. In the months following, Garcia said the two of them continued to text and video chat on Snapchat, which deletes conversations within 24 hours. Garcia told jurors that when Ortega began talking about using a young girl sexually, sharing the child with other men, and having her teach the girl how to please him, she began to take photos of their conversations with her tablet. During her closing arguments Wednesday afternoon, defense attorney Violet White reminded jurors that Ortega's father, Andres, and sister, Vanessa Ontiveros, testified Ortega was never alone with the child. Ontiveros also testified the child in the photo had a different skin tone than her relative and lacks not only the pierced ears that her relative has, but the forked tongue as well. Are you willing to convict Fabian based on someone being 80% sure? Are you willing to convict based on 90% sure? White said. I submit to you, that's not beyond a reasonable doubt. White also attacked the investigation done by OCSO investigator Heidi Zavala, who testified she didn't follow up on a subpoena to try to get Ortega's cell phone, didn't seek a subpoena from Snapchat, and didn't explore whether someone could have assumed Ortega's identity on Snapchat. The defense attorney also reminded jurors that when Zavala sought a search warrant for Ortega's bedroom and his arrest warrant, she told the judge the young girl said she'd been sexually abused, although she wasn't capable of forming complete sentences yet. Despite insisting they were a really tight-knit family, both Ortega's father and sister said they had no idea where Ortega was in September 2020, saying only that he was away. I want to know where Away Texas is, Assistant Ector County District Attorney William Prasher said during his portion of closing arguments. You can think Heidi Zavala is a horrible person. You can think she is a horrible investigator, but that doesn't change anything, Prasher said. The defendant supplied all of the evidence you need. Prasher told jurors, there's no question it was Ortega who sent the photo to Garcia. They'd been video chatting. She saw his face. She saw his whole body. There's no doubt who she was chatting with, Prasher said. Rain told jurors that if they looked closely enough at the photo turned over to authorities by Garcia, they actually will see a forked tongue, and she said the difference in skin tones can be explained away by flash photography. The punishment portion of Ortega's trial is expected to begin 9:30 a.m. Thursday. Judge John Schrode of the 858th District Court is presiding in the trial. Odessan sentenced to 3 years, 8 months. An Odessa man who has been in the Ector County Jail since July 2018 in connection with the shooting death of another local man was sentenced Monday to 3 years, 8 months in prison after a plea agreement. Christopher George, 38, pleaded guilty to aggravated assault by threat in exchange for a murder charge being dismissed against him on the 358th Ector County District Court. On July 13, 2018, Reginald White, 41, was shot to death outside a convenience store near Highway 80 and 8th Street. Rondale Jared Farish was found guilty of murder by an Ector County jury in April and sentenced to 65 years in prison. During Farish's trial, prosecutors presented evidence that two relatives of Farish argued with White and White's brother at Club Tequila and Red Zone on 8th Street and then ran into each other again at a convenience store. The prosecutors showed jurors surveillance video from inside the store that showed George opened up the convenience store door and gesturing to Farish to come outside. The video then showed Farish running outside the store and White dropping to the ground seconds later after four gunshots were heard. Whomever fired the shots was not seen on camera, but Farish was seen running from the scene along with George. Murder trial continues in Odessa stabbing death. Jurors in the murder trial of an Odessa man accused of stabbing another man to death 2 years ago heard from two men Wednesday who said they witnessed the incident. Joseph Richard Grundahl, Jr., 33, is charged with murder in the December 13, 2020 death of Austin Pacias, 25. His defense attorneys have suggested he acted in self-defense. Felipe Limon Jr. told jurors he was living in a downstairs apartment at the Carriage House Apartments on Dixie Boulevard with his son and granddaughter in December 2020. On the night of the incident, the family was watching The Vampire Diaries and eating pickles and popcorn when they heard a lot of cussing from the apartment directly upstairs, Limon said. He didn't know the names of the two women and man living in the apartment, but thought the two women were sisters, Limon said. His son asked their neighbors to calm down, and they apologized, but started up again 5 to 10 minutes later, Limon said. At that point, Limon said he opened his door and saw a young man he later came to know as Pacias standing outside his apartment getting ready to leave. The man Pacias had been arguing with said something that prompted Pacias to throw up his arms, Limon said. Seconds later, the man jumped over the stairs railing and ended up standing in front of Pacias, Limon said. Pacias pushed the man away and the man reacted by throwing what he thought was a punch at Pacias. To his surprise, Pacias responded by saying, "You stabbed me," and falling to his knees and then onto his face, Limon said. At that point, Limon said his son instructed him to grab a towel so he could put pressure on Pacias's wounds, as the younger of the two sisters from upstairs told Pacias an ambulance was on the way. His son also gave Pacias chest compressions, but it was too late. Limon testified he'd seen Pacias at the apartment visiting both sisters on a few occasions. Limon told jurors he was never interviewed by the police following the incident. The first time he told a story to the authorities was last week when he spoke with an investigator with the Ector County District Attorney's Office. Christopher Penn told jurors he was playing Xbox at a buddy's upstairs apartment late on the evening of December  2020 when he decided to take a smoke break outside. While doing so, he chatted with the next-door neighbor, a woman and a man, whom prosecutors have identified as Natalie Lassiter and Grundahl. A short time later, Penn said a man, whom prosecutors have said was Pacias, climbed the stairs to the apartment and begged the woman to rekindle her romance with him. The woman refused, and as time went on, the man became more frustrated and agitated, at one point grabbing the woman's face and demanding she look at him, Penn said. The man began to pace and kept getting louder and then began to make threats about her family, Penn said. Eventually, the man pulled a knife, prompting the man he'd been chatting with to pull a knife as well and to chase the other man down the stairs, Penn said. Not wanting to get involved, Penn said he stayed where he was, but he heard the rejected lover getting stabbed and him saying, "You got me, you stabbed me." Penn testified he later picked Grondahl out of a photo lineup as the man he'd been chatting with and the man who stabbed the victim. Jurors also heard from one of the sisters who lived in the upstairs apartment. Deborah Renee Caldwell testified she and her sister, Natalie Lassiter, lived in Building 8, Apartment 2F of the Carriage House Apartments in December 2020. At the time of the murder, Caldwell said she was being treated at the hospital after having been attacked by some stray dogs while taking out the trash. Caldwell testified she only allowed her sister to have friends she approved of over to visit, and Grondahl was one of them. Despite what Limon testified, Caldwell said Pasillas was not allowed at the apartment and she'd never seen Pasillas with her sister or anywhere near the apartment. "I didn't like Austin from the get-go. I could tell he was on drugs," Caldwell said. Assistant Ector County District Attorney Elizabeth Howard told jurors during opening statements, "The evidence will show that after fleeing the scene, Grondahl sent messages to Lassiter asking her to clean up the crime scene and to delete their conversations." On Wednesday, Caldwell said she couldn't recall allowing her sister to use her cell phone or Facebook account in the hours after the murder. Lassiter has been charged with hindering apprehension or prosecution in connection with the case. Outside the presence of the jury and prior to opening statements Tuesday, she told 244th Ector County District Court Judge James Rush she intends to testify on behalf of the state against the advice of her attorney. She told the judge she just wants to do the right thing. Deputy Tarrant County Medical Examiner Dr. Tasha Greenberg testified Wednesday Pasillas died after being stabbed in the heart. He also suffered two other stab wounds to the chest and a slash on his upper arm. Harmony reports potentially concerning comments. At approximately noon Wednesday, an employee of a nearby business notified the campus security officer of Harmony Science Academy Odessa of some potentially concerning comments made by a customer regarding the school. While the customer's comments did not constitute a specific threat, the security officer determined it was necessary to enact campus security protocols as a precaution. Local law enforcement was contacted and the campus was placed on temporary secure status, a news release said. At this time, Odessa police have concluded its investigation and determined that there is no credible threat to the campus. The secure status has been lifted for the campus, though OPD officers remained on campus as a precautionary measure, the release said. All students and team members are currently safe, and students' families have been notified. No other comment is available at this time. Death notice for Thursday, May 26th. Carmen R. Ramirez Barrios. Carmen R. Ramirez Barrios, 84, of Odessa, died Saturday, May 21st, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Friday, May 27th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Mystified by sudden reaction to corn oats. "Dear Dr. Roach, please advise. Do our bodies reject certain foods as we get older? I am a healthy, slender, 70-year-old woman on no medications. For several years now, I can't eat anything made of oats or corn, to name a couple. I get an irritation in my throat and mucus buildup, which drives me crazy. This is not an allergy. I have no other problems. I've always been able to eat anything, but there's a lot that I can't enjoy anymore. How does this happen? Is it me or is it the food?" JB. Answer: I wouldn't quickly dismiss the possibility of food allergies so quickly. Food allergies have highly variable symptoms depending on the person and the food they are allergic to. It is possible to have a food allergy with upper airway symptoms such as throat irritation or nose and sinus symptoms, like nasal mucus, without other food allergy symptoms such as wheezing, skin rash, swelling around the mouth and face, or the most dangerous of all, anaphylaxis. However, it is not common at all to have just the symptoms you describe. Corn and oats are also not typical food allergens, but they certainly are reported. Having a reaction like you described to a food you have consumed all your life is also uncommon. A consultation with an allergist would be reasonable.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, May 26th. Abuse victim can't get mother to see truth. Dear Abby, one of my siblings was abused as a child. In turn, he abused me when he was a preteen and into his teens. It stopped when he got a girlfriend at the age of 14. This was news to my parents. Now that the cat is out of the bag, I have tried to explain to my mom that I don't like being around him. She has heard me, but she pretends like it didn't happen and still tries to get everyone together for holidays, etc. The idea of seeing him makes me sick, and I'm terrified for his children. I went to therapy as a young adult to work out my issues with him and what happened. The abuse has affected my ability to hold on to relationships, and I fight depression often, which I am good at hiding. She keeps saying, "But you were so close as kids." I don't think she understands what grooming is. Can you please explain it in a manner that doesn't make me feel like it's all my fault? Signed, Getting Beyond It. Dear Getting, your fault? None of what happened was your fault. Predators groom victims by first establishing a close relationship with them, telling them they are special, that their bond is special, that the usual rules of behavior do not apply to them, bestowing time, attention, and gifts, and pledging them to secrecy. Please show this to your mother. I hope it will help her understand that getting the family together is not in the cards now or ever. I am concerned by your statement that the abuse has caused you to be depressed, which you are good at hiding, which prevents you from forming relationships. Those issues might be resolved if, as an adult, you consult another licensed psychotherapist. While it may not be something you wish to revisit, I hope you will consider it. Dear Abby, I am a woman who is engaged to a wonderful woman who has a busy life. We met online 18 months ago and felt an instant connection. She has two grown children, a 16-year-old son, two grandchildren, and one on the way. We live 5 hours apart and see each other every 3 weeks. My concern is that we talk only once or twice during the week and maybe text once a day. It is not enough for me. I have expressed how I feel, but I think she's just too busy. She plans on moving in with me once we are married. I recently purchased a brand new home. Because she is so involved in her family's lives, I can't see her leaving them to live with me. What should I do? Signed, Nervous in New Jersey. Dear Nervous, you and your fiancé need to have a serious, in-depth conversation about how this will work. It is important you two clarify how she plans to divide her time between you and her family, because right now, you are getting the short end of the stick. Will the 16-year-old live with you? Because you aren't getting what you need from this relationship, despite the fact that you have explained what your needs are, it may be time to rethink this romance.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.